Let's do it. Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday. African American Empowerment, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, and the coming to you live. It's Empowerment Saturday. 365 days of getting it in for African Americans, and that's just how it is. We got a great show for you today. We got Brother Spain on tap, Brother George, Willie Lynch Kwanzaa, and much, much more. It's a great conversation. Call family, call friends. Tell them what we're doing. African American empowerment, and there is no greater, no better love than for self and time. Greater love. Welcome, brothers and sisters. Welcome one, welcome all to the Empowerment Network. It's African American empowerment. And again, when you reflect on that thought, right, who's thinking about specifically targeting the empowerment of African Americans in this country, the United States, that is? Who's thinking about how we're going to develop institutions that define our own reality that help create a prosperous future for our people? There's nothing wrong with people working together. We've seen that, right? There are groups who work together, right, to make sure that they have institutions that define their own reality, and we want to do the same thing. There are organizations that practice what it is that we're talking about here in community. They do the work of working on themselves. They do the work of collectively developing their young people, and they create those institutions that define, refine, organize, and empower their young people to do what needs to be done. That's our job, right? And we've gotten away from systems that work, and we must return to those systems. We must turn back to those systems that educate, motivate, and inspire our people to be the best that they can be. Nobody else can do that for us. It's not anyone else's job but yours to educate your children. But we can do that collectively as well as individual. So there's a model: individual, families, and communities. And if African Americans will focus on developing each individual, that then becomes a critical part of a family, and then roll that into developing families inside of a community that have strong individuals, and we got it again. We got it again. So let's move now to the five pillars of the peace concept. Here they are. I'm going to say it every week. You have to have a political agenda, African Americans. That political agenda is understanding American and world politics. I add a world in there now, right? Because you got to be able to have a global network, right, to understand global politics as well as the local, state, and national politics, right, where we are. Next is economics, right? You have to understand the economic system, which is called capitalism, how that system works, and how we can utilize resources to invest, reinvest, mobilize, move, purchase land, buildings, infrastructure, whatever we need to do to develop our institutions, that's what we need to do. We have to have economics to do that. We have to understand the capitalistic system and the system of capitalism. Then there's the A. This comes down to you directly, individual now. What is your status in terms of health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition? That's mental health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual health. And those are the things that you have to work on in terms of making sure that you take care of your temple or your body. You got to do that. That's the work that you need to do for yourself. And we have to do that work, right? It's important that you take care of your body, that you work out, that you do the things necessary. Push away from the table. Stay away from processed foods. Leave the refined sugars and salts alone. Those are the things we know we need to do. And then tune that body, tune that mind, and tune that spirit. And now, see, relevant cultural programs. That's the C. Those relevant cultural programs help us to have boundaries, right, that we work inside of to help our young people and our families stay in track and stay online. Those cultural programs that help us to define and redefine ourselves and who we are. And lastly, it's a comprehensive education. That comprehensive education really helps us to look at it from an expansive perspective where we're covering all the grounds and we're always educating ourselves, getting better and better and better. And now the Stan Macklin moment. Be back with you.
Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah,
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brother Stan is absolutely right, brothers and sisters. We need institutions that define our own reality. We have to know what's going on politically. We have to know what's going on economically. We have to know what's going on culturally. We have to know what's going on educationally. We have to develop ourselves. We have to do that work. And it's the programs like this and many others that have us to do a degree of work that continues to pile on those thoughts about what we need to do the work of working on ourselves. And now, it's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Brother George, we're coming up on you in just a second. I want to thank y'all. We got Brother Spain coming up in just a minute. But we want you to know that we're out here and we're doing the work of working on ourselves. Let's continue to do that work to get that work done. Brother George. Oh, yeah. Bring it. Hey, Mom. Hey, wife. Y'all. Hey, that's right, right here. We ain't going nowhere, Brother George. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing marvelous, man. Marvelous, marvelous. We got a great show on tap. We got Brother Spain in the building, and we got you coming up with Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa. I'm excited. What you got for us?
Can't wait. Well, the Nguza Saba, I think this was the principle of the day of the week last week, but I think it's appropriate for this week as well. Imani, to believe with all our heart in our parents, our teachers, our leaders, our people, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle. I think that the conversation that we're going to have with the brothers today is going to fit right in that category. Imani, the power I need in order to do great things comes from spiritual connectedness. Let this be the groundwork for all that I think and all that I do in this physical plane, on this physical plane. Let me nurture a close relationship with my higher power, the ancestors, and the positive spiritual forces of the universe. Now, with the Willie Lynch segment today, I'm going to read from a book that's called Greek Philosophy is Stolen Egyptian Philosophy, Stolen Legacy by George D.M. James. And what he's doing is he's making a point of how we're disrespected and disregarded by the different systems like the missionary system and some of the fraternal orders. I think that the fraternities and sororities have done a lot of great work in our community. However, the basis of its foundations based on Greek philosophy, I think, is it needs to be looked at again. This is what he says. They must discontinue the practice of quoting Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle in their speeches as intellectual models, because we know that their philosophy was stolen. They must relinquish membership from all Greek letter fraternities and sororities, and they must abolish all Greek letter fraternities and sororities from all colored colleges, because they have been a source of promotion of inferiority complex and of educating the black people against themselves. We come now to the counteraction of the second set of phenomena, the missionary activities in defamatory literature and exhibitions which provoke disrespect for and laughter at the black people. Just as the first set of phenomena, so it is in the second. The black people must adopt a negative attitude in their attempt to live up to their philosophy of redemption. Of course, they are perfectly well aware that the activities of missionaries are the result of their own miseducation through the medium of a false tradition about black people. But since their problem is also one of emancipation from certain social evils, the black people feel that they are entitled to a change in missionary policy. For these reasons, I suggest that the negative attitude of the black people should consist first of a boycott of missionary literature and exhibitions, and secondly, of a perpetual protest against these forms of missionary policy until the change is brought about. For as long as missionary enterprise maintains its policies of militancy against African culture, it will be disrespected. This is the least that the black people are entitled to. Respectful treatment because they are the representatives of the oldest civilization in the world from which all other cultures have borrowed. I have frequently seen in the parish magazines of some European churches pictures that follow this description. An African chief dressed in a new silk hat, a long skirt, but no trousers, a long shirt, but no trousers, a frock coat and bare feet, probably to provide amusement parishioners and to excite their pity. This is what the black people must protest against, and this is how they must live up to their philosophy of redemption and work it out. Now, I read that because if you really understood what he was saying right there, that's exactly what Kyrie Irving and Yee went through. They were reclaiming what is historically ours. And the missionaries came out and said, that's anti-Semitic, you know, what you just did. You know, so it's like, wait a minute. They were claiming something that was rightfully theirs. And so you call it anti-Semitic because you decided you wanted to claim it too. So, you know, this is the perfect example of what Kyrie Irving and Yee went through. Now, you got to keep in mind that this book was written back in the 1930s. And that's why you hear the language like colored colleges and all these different things, because the same exact thing that was going on back in the 1930s is still going on, and it's almost 100 years later. You know, so we got to wake up, and I think that a perfect example of that is going to be with Brother Spain today. So back to you, Brother Marvin, unless you have a question.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Thank you, Brother George. A great segment. Really quickly. If we had to boycott anything right now or protest anything right now as a people, what would that be?
The miseducation of our children. Because when our children are miseducated, then that means that they're going to have a negative self-identity. You know, and when you have a negative self-image, you know, the way you see yourself is always less than, then you're not going to, you know, aspire to achieve great things because you feel like you can't do it from the start because the system teaches you and trains you that you can't do it. But what you can do is you can, you know, pick up garbage or you can, you know, like, I'm not trying to take away the dignity of working, period. But what I'm saying is every single one of us is not that. Every single one of us is not an engineer, but every single one of us doesn't have to always do mega work either. You know, it could be an equal mix of all of that, you know. But our people have been convinced that we're only prepared to do the meager job, and many of us accept treatment that's okay. You know, just let me get a job and let me, you know, nah. You know, we're the ones who, on one level, created all of the civilized systems function with any type of consistency. We did that. Our people did that. And so to take a back seat to everyone else and they just take, you know, what we spent long, hard, thousands of years to produce, and we have to be reduced to just picking up the trash and painting lines in the street and all, you know, come on, man. You know, so brother, that's what I think we should protest against, the miseducation of our children.
I love it. I love it. Thank you, Brother George. Appreciate you. And see you down the line a little bit. Absolutely. Great job, brother. Great job. Brothers and sisters, we're in a position right now to make changes, but we're going to have to do that work. We are going to have to look at ourselves. The brother said it. If you're going to protest anything, protest the way that we're treating each other. If you're going to protest anything, protest the way that we don't understand the system. If you're going to protest anything, protest the desire to not want to read, to not want to develop your children, to not want to parent, to mother, to father, to grandparent, to take care of what's yours, to do a maintenance program, to understand the economic system. Protest lack of knowledge. Protest the blood that's being shed in the streets between us. If you want to protest something, protest the disrespect for our elderly that we have. Not anybody else. See, we don't talk about other people. This is housekeeping. Will you protest the lack of parenting in our community and institutions that define our own reality, that educate our young people on how we should teach, train, and develop the next generation? Will you protest the disrespect that we have for our men and our women? Vice versa, one for the other. Will you disrespect disloyalty and greed and selfishness? Will you protest moving away from the foundational principles that you could borrow a cup of sugar from the next door neighbor and you knew who that was? Will you protest the giving away of our babies to a system that don't take care of them properly? Now, I'm not saying that all of our people aren't doing well, and I'm not saying all of our people are doing well, but I'm saying we have some work to do. So I'm challenging you today to look at yourselves and say, we are these things. We are great. We are positive. We are value. We are the original kings and queens, right? But we can't reclaim that title just because somebody else had it. It's our time to step up and win the belt back. It's our time to step up and win the title. See, just because your dad was the world champion don't mean that you can wear his belt. He already took the steps, and if he trained you how to do it, which has been, the title has been stripped from you, now you got to go earn it. The question is, are you willing to do the work? Are you willing to educate yourself? Are you willing to do the work? Because we are great, but we got to find that within ourselves, and we must do that today. We got to do that for ourselves and for the next generation. And now, without further delay, we got a brother, Black Engineer, coming to you live. Brother Robert Spain is coming to join us today on the show. You know how we welcome him in. Welcome him in, audience. Brother Spain, come on.
Bring it. What?
Uh-huh. Brother Spain.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I am wonderfully blessed and gratefully honored to be a guest on your show today.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, here's the thing, right? I want you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself. And I hate to say it this way, but he is an African-American or a black engineer, right? So tell us about your foundation and then tell us about yourself, and then we'll get into the other segments of the show. Because your theme, brother, is success is yours, right?
Correct.
Make sure I got that right.
Absolutely.
Success is yours, right? So talk
yes,
to our audience. Tell us about you, and then we'll get on into the flow of the show. Thank you, brother, for coming.
Well, no problem. Brother Rome, Brother George, again, thank you. I'm honored to be here with you and your audience today. I am a native of Richmond, born and raised in Highland Park, Northside. Attended private school for the early years, first through five. And then I attended Henderson Middle School. And then my parents moved from the city to Chesterfield County, where I was educated in the Chesterfield County school system. Had some pretty good success in that school system, as well as at Richmond Public Schools, which created my foundation. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that. Went on to Old Dominion University, where I received my degree in civil engineering technology with a minor in environmental science. I've done some master's coursework in engineering management. Have held quite a few positions in and around the city, some notable projects, Richmond Convention Center, the walk and bike trail on the city side leading up to Henrico County, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Currently, I, you know, work for a consulting firm in the south side of Richmond and performing projects all up and down the East Coast, but I also have my own business, consulting, provide my engineering services to residential homeowners, commercial property owners, et cetera, and doing land development. A lot of these things that I'm going to be talking about today, I think, is in line with what I've heard so far and from some of the conversations we've had, and what I call the pillars of which you referenced, you know, the importance of us as a people to understand the politics, the economics, how athletics plays a role in the development of our youth, understanding our real culture and not a perceived culture through TV and movies. And the most important piece of those five is the education. I'm going to talk pretty intensely about the education, not just from a school perspective, but what we as parents are required to share with our young people so that they understand the obstacles that exist, but because of those obstacles, create opportunity. And not fearing those obstacles, but facing them with a confidence, with a vigor that you will not be defeated, because success is yours. But you have to prepare yourself for it. It doesn't just happen. It just does not happen. You have to prepare yourself.
I like that.
Failing to prepare yourself, failing to prepare our young people, our children, is where we fall short. So I'm going to pause right there and then allow you to show me how we're going to do this and get into some details to understand the real meaning of success.
Okay, so you talked about failing to prepare, right? So let's start right there in terms of your own preparation, right? So you went, you talked about your private school experience, and then you went to RPS, of course, and then you went out to Chesterfield. So in terms of your preparation, what are the tools or the qualities that prepared you for ODU and then your civil engineering career?
All right. Excellent question. First and foremost, you know, I have been blessed truly by a mother and father who adopted me at birth and gave me unconditional love. More importantly,
shout out.
They did not hesitate to correct me immediately. Principle, character, and how you will conduct yourself when you step outside of these doors, out of these walls that we call our home. I had a father that showed me some things that are still relevant to this day, and we're talking early 60s and 70s, and I'm looking at him like, what are you talking about? And I get it. Growing up in Highland Park was interesting. It was fun. I heard you reference borrowing sugar from the neighbor because you knew who the neighbor was. We did that. You know, we didn't have everything, but we had enough. The village, the neighborhood, the neighbors had just as much responsibility to speak on my behalf as my parents when they weren't available or when they were working. You know,
that's
times
right.
have changed. Times have changed significantly where we move into neighborhoods and we don't necessarily know our neighbors. Why? Because our neighbors ain't trying to know us. What is that all about? You think you got something in your house that I want? You think you got something in your house that I need or that I don't have myself? Why is that? The mentality, the whole thing that I learned going from growing up in Highland Park in a neighborhood that was together, where neighbors knew one another, they respected one another, they helped out when there was a need, the men gathered around. You know, if there was a problem with someone's car, they all put their heads together and, you know, figured it out. Those are things that I saw. The women, you know, they took care of home, they were working, but they didn't take no mess either. You won't go mess with nobody's child on this block for any unjustified reason. However, there was a change in my life about to come that I had no idea of. My parents were politically conscious. They would talk to me about these things and the politics. And you know, I'm not going to say I understood it, but I listened. And then we moved to Chesterfield in 1978. I went to a school that was predominantly white, which was culture shock for me. At the end of the day, the principal showed me where my bus was to be parked and where I was to board that bus and wrote that number for that bus on that piece of paper. And when that bell rang, I could not wait because I'm like, I have no idea why I'm in this school with all these people that don't look like me. As I walked to that bus and as I looked to put my foot on that step, the bus driver sitting in the seat turned and looked at me and told me, where are you going? Older white woman. I said, this is my first day in school, and the principal told me that this is the bus that I ride to take me home. That individual told me I would not step my black ass on her bus. I stood there thinking, what am I going to do? I know I got to get home. She closed the door as she exited the bus, walked to the school office, and the principal brought her back to that bus and told her he will ride this bus. He is new to our neighborhood and our community, and he is a student here. So imagine 11 years old getting on a bus where a white woman just told me I'm not going to get my black ass on that bus. And as all these students are boarding the bus, of whom I don't know, as the only African-American on that bus, because there was no African-Americans in the neighborhood that my parents moved to, and I'm thinking, I'm going to have to fight my whole way home. That's all I'm thinking the whole ride. Well, long story short, by the time I finished middle school and went on to high school, the coach and my counselor at the middle school told me not to try out because he already had his team. So I've already experienced two scenarios of racism on my first day of school, of which I have never experienced. At that point, my parents had a meeting with the principal, with the counselor, and they made me sit and listen to that dialogue. And I've never heard a silence in the room after my parents finished talking. As I went on to high school at Meadowbrook, in Chesterfield. There were 1,500 students, and my freshman year, there were 13 African-Americans. I'm still walking around in shock 2 years later. Well, I went on to develop myself as my parents encouraged me that these people will not stop me from being what I want to be. And I chose to believe that. The grading scale was different, which means I had to learn to study differently. I failed, which I've never failed before, from middle school, learning, you know, the new way they teach and how they assume you know everything, because it was on me to go home and study. And it was at that time that I realized I got to do this because they're not going to give it to me. I constantly heard that. So as these lessons are being taught to me early on, that's when I changed. I changed expecting things just to happen without work was foolish. I went on to become the first student government president in Chesterfield County history at Meadowbrook, where by the time I got into my junior year, we may have had 100 students of African American, and the rest were of other nationalities or didn't look like us, and I won. I went on to lead our basketball team to its first ever playoffs. I received honors and accolades for my achievements that the school had never seen before. And what I found out after I graduated, the coach from the middle school who told me not to try out for his team was bringing his players to watch me play. All of that to tell you, that's why we have to change what we're doing to improve the lives of our young people. They do what you see. They act like you act. If you're giving them a bad blueprint, guaranteed it's not going to change on its own. Obstacles create opportunity. The difference is we cannot fear and lack confidence when we are confronted with an obstacle. We have to have the confidence to endure whatever's being put before us to deter us from our goal. A lot of times families grow up not understanding the importance of land, the economics related to land, where those folks who are not like us, that's all they know, because when they stole us from our motherland, our continent, where we were destined to be inherited of kings and queens in our tribal communities and the land we owned, we were brought here to think that we weren't capable for only to be slaves. That was their thought. And unfortunately, we maintained that thought in spite of those who chose to overcome slavery. The ignorance that we can't, the ignorance that we won't read. When we were reading in tongues, we were reading late at night. We would talk in code to keep those folks off of us. The intelligence exists. The problem is we're using it in the wrong vein and against each other. Right now, politically, it is more than obvious. They fear us instead of embracing us. They fear our intelligence, our work ethic, our intuitiveness, our ability to create something out of nothing and survive. That's what our lineage is. That's what our heritage represents. And they can't stand it. We will not shiver in fear anymore. The unfortunate political climate is a mess because they put the wrong person in that place, and he exposed the ignorance, the ability to lie, the ability to not take responsibility. and chose to see that as power. Ignorance, lying, and deceit is what was on full display. They call us monkeys. I ain't never seen some of them other people that don't look like us climb walls like that ever before on January 6th. And they tried to condone it. All I can say is education is power. What they put in these books thinking we can't read, what we won't read, we've got to fool them. We've got to change the environment. If we choose not to educate ourselves on the real political climate, what economics, owning land really means, how athletics is not about LeBron James as he's performing. If you think of LeBron James as a human being, this is the first of many African-American athletes that you cannot say has had a political or a police or legal confrontation.
True.
This man has not been observed drunk in public. He has not been observed womanizing. He don't have 10, 15 children in different states because he can, because he got the money. He's been with his high school sweetheart since they fell in love in high school and raising their boys, and he's doing it with respect and without disrespecting women, disrespecting the league, disrespecting our culture. He's a model, but he represents 1%. Everybody's not going to be LeBron. Everybody's not going to be Michael Jordan. Everybody's not going to be Magic Johnson. But you cannot compare one African-American athlete of notoriety to LeBron James that has kept his nose, his eyes, his heart clear of deceit, illegal activity, or disrespect. That can happen across any discipline, any line of work. Everybody's not going to make the league, NFL, baseball, hockey, tennis, soccer. That's a chosen few. But there's plenty of work to be done in a lot of other professions out here. And one of my dreams, as I was going with my mother, she was attending BTU, and I could see these cranes building the Coliseum. I'm telling my age. And all I told my mom is, that's what I want to do. I was dreaming. I was allowed to dream. As children, that is what they seek, a dream, find their passion. We have to nurture that. As parents, as elders of the community, we cannot continue to stand by and think they're going to figure this out on their own without proper guidance and leadership. I'm reading a book right now on dialogue that was given to me my freshman year in college. And I'm thinking, hell, I know what dialogue is. It's a conversation, right? We talk back and forth. We figure it out. No, wrong, 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 wrong. The best part of a conversation and dialogue with anyone is someone deciding to listen first. How often do we have a conversation with somebody and they interrupt us before we complete our thought? How often does someone ask you what's your problem, and when you try and explain to them, they interrupt you and tell you what your problem is? How is that resolving anything? How is that gaining confidence that you, inviting me to have this conversation, are taking enough time to listen to me until I completed my statement for you to fully understand where I am? And I could be wrong as two left shoes. But you didn't give me the chance to explain it to you. Now we at odds because you interrupted me. You told me what you thought. And now you justify my ignorance. If I can't be heard, how am I going to be expected to listen? One of my father's sayings that I didn't get a long time ago, you keep on talking, you ain't going to learn a whole lot. Too many times.
I heard that.
people choose to instigate gossip about somebody instead of helping. But the minute something goes wrong in your life, you want somebody to help you. But when that person needed help, you didn't go down there and loan them some sugar, loan them $5, or just go down there and talk and sit with them. But you on the phone gossiping about what you saw, what you heard, what you think. All that citizen has got to stop, man. And the real root of that is we're miseducated on really how to contend and have dialogue with one another. We're too busy to pass, too quick to pass judgment. But you don't want nobody to pass judgment on you. You don't want nobody speaking bad on your kids.
Right. Isn't that true?
So as I matriculated through high school and got to Old Dominion, I realized, as my father said, basketball ain't your first priority. The education is. And I was like, what? I'm going to the league. You tripping. He was like, okay, you think you're going to the league, but you better be able to count that money when you get there. You better be able to read that contract before you sign it. You better understand what the language is in that contract other than just what your attorney is telling you. None of that made sense at the time because all I think was, shit, I'm going to the league. Huh? I ain't got to listen to that. Well, those league dreams ended after my freshman year and I got cut. So now what? The same things that he told me I would need to be responsible for if I did make the league are the same things I needed to understand as I went on to pursue this degree. That man, or that woman is not standing at the front of that classroom just for the sake of their health. They're trying to teach you how to be the best at a profession. Now, you need to understand one thing, and I'm saying this to the audience and everyone within the sound of my voice. A career is whatever you choose. If you're going to be a janitor, be the best janitor they ever saw. If you're going to work in refuse for a city or the county, be the best one they've ever saw. Some of my mentors, believe it or not, are not college educated, but they're educated. One owns a janitorial business. One owns a pest control business. And another one owns a construction company. And I tell you, these three individuals will work circles around anybody else in their field. They work longer, they work harder than anybody I've ever seen. But they're true to their craft. They accepted the challenge, they accepted the obstacles, and they went out there and they executed. And they have contracts, they've got no worries financially. No worries financially. They own land. They're in their kids' lives. They're active in their community. And they're proud business owners. And they're all African American. So don't think just because I'm an engineer, I think that I am better than or I feel that I am better than. I am learning from those who didn't even walk the same walk that I have. Their houses are three times bigger than mine. The cars they drive are a lot nicer than mine. All because they chose to work. They chose not to just accept what was being told to them. They chose to read. So for me, I said, man, looking around in the classroom, I'm one of 20, one of 25, in some cases it was one of 50. One African-American male, And there was a sister in my class at the time who was from Highland Park also. And we were the only two faces that looked alike out of this entire curriculum of pursuing our engineering degree. And God bless her, she passed away. But I'm looking at the demographics. I'm like, damn, this is what I'm going to be up against once I finish. This looks like when I went to Fallen Creek Middle School in Chesterfield in 1978, and I was told not to get on the bus. The dynamics almost 6-7 years later doesn't look any different. I'm listening to cats as we're approaching graduation, and they got offers already, or their dad already owns a firm or is a partner in a firm. I'm filling out applications. I'm responding to blind ads in the newspaper. But one thing that didn't stop me was I had my goal in mind. And one of my professors gave me an acronym for the word success that I still have in my office today. And most people think of success, oh, you got plenty of money, you got this, you got that. No, success is peace of mind. That I've done what I need to do today. Every day, you need to do something to improve yourself. If you have not, you're behind.
I like it.
If you choose not to read, you're behind. And the person that wants it more just got ahead of you. What you going to do? Let's talk about athletics a little bit. Everyone thinks, oh, if you're playing sports, you're going to make it to the league. And I think I referenced to this earlier. No, that's not the case. Only 1% of those that participate make it to the elite level, whether it's overseas or here on the mainland, 1% or less. But the best thing that happened to me through athletics was understanding how to take leadership, how to be coached, understand my role. If I've got 5 other players on my basketball team or 10 other players on my football team, we all have a position to play. And you have an assignment based on the position that you are in the role of. Do your job to run the play. Well, how can I run the play? You have to exercise. You have to prepare. You have to do drills. You have to study to understand what your role is and how to effectively carry it out. Life is no different. Understand what is your passion. What is it that you like to do? Athletics is fun. The thrill of victory, you can't beat it. A loss hurts, but when you've given your all, hey, you got respect. Work is no different. We play athletics. We didn't get paid a dime in high school, middle school, recreation. It was the thrill. It was the fun. It was the spirit of being engaged with others and being successful. That's what happens in most workplaces. The problem is people work, but they don't love what they do. Unfortunately, some, because they chose not to pursue their dreams or commit to the obstacles in order to get to their dreams, they just took a job because they needed to do something.
True.
I need some money. When you're doing something you enjoy, it's not work. You don't mind waking up and going to that profession. And again, it doesn't have to be a degree profession. It can be a laborious profession. But if that's what you enjoy, it's not work. And it shows when you're not on the job, but you're at work because you love your job. You don't have to be told what to do. You already know. Because it's a passion. And what comes with passion is reward. And I'm not just talking in money, because those who have the power around you would recognize by your effort and therefore would recommend you for reward. You don't even have to ask for it. Too often people go to jobs and thinking they, because they show up on time and they sit and they push papers around, they think they're going to get rewarded. Man, if you was a supervisor or in charge of that company or the owner of that company, you would know the difference. Because 9 times out of 10, you had to sit in that position to understand where each role and responsibility exists and what it takes to execute. So you can't be fooled. But that's the person that gets loud, wants to make a scene. I deserve this. I deserve that. You shouldn't have to even make a scene if you did what you were supposed to do, if you was trained for it. The whole thing I'm getting to here is understanding our culture. The worst thing in this world is to expect everything and you've done nothing to deserve it.
All right now. All right.
My life has been filled with challenges. I ain't saying my yellow sheet is as long as the block I live on, but I'm not perfect. I had a bad spot in school. My grades dropped. I had to walk from ODU to Norfolk State. And don't think an HBCU was going to be a walk in the park. That gentleman that taught surveying was one of the toughest courses I've ever taken. But I know surveying better than most of these practicing professionals out here now because of what that man made me understand. You're not just going to sit in his class and act like you want to be here. If you don't want to be here, you can leave. But you will learn this subject matter. I'll never forget his words. That was day one. And you know there were some ignorant folks because some of them got up and walked out. And I'm thinking, you paid for this. And you walk out and don't come back? But that's okay. I didn't leave. I got an A and a B and was able, and got reaccepted into ODU, and I finished on a roll. My dad took my car away, said, oh, yeah, you want to go down there and wild out? Do it on your feet. So, you know, I can go on, but I know there's probably some questions or some things you guys want to ask me, but I just wanted to let you know the road ain't easy out here for us, but that don't mean we lay down and allow things to happen to us. We got to stand up and take our position. And we got to educate ourselves on the, what I'm calling the five pillars of your program, brother. Politics, economics, athletics, culture, and the most important, education. You got to have it. With that, you can create your own success. Success is yours if you want it. See your goal. See your goal. Understand what it is you want to pursue. And your first decision don't mean you might not change your mind. That's okay. But the key is get in the game. Understand what it takes to be what it is you want to pursue. Nobody's just going to hand it to you. Because most people that have earned it didn't have humble beginnings. It wasn't handed to them like some of these other folks we know. We got to work for ours. Next, that's the S for success, capital S. Under you, understand your obstacles. What do I have to go through to become what it is I want to become? Find somebody else that has done it. Ask them if they will mentor you. So you understand what the obstacles are, what the challenges are, what type of tests you need to be prepared to take in order to become an HVAC technician or a mechanical a contractor to work on HVAC equipment. What does it take to run a business? How does the economics work? You can't just run a business and you have no idea what the financial requirements are. That's foolish. Next. C, create a positive mental picture. The worst thing that we do to ourselves is, I'll never be that because there's no way I can become that. Well, you done already told yourself what you're not going to do. Why do that to yourself? You got enough people out here that don't want you in the business. The last person that needs to be criticizing you is you. Believe in yourself. I don't care what you've been through, how bad he treated you, how bad she treated you, whether your mama or your daddy won't dare. God is with you. You have to trust him to order your steps. People will let you down.
I like that.
People will let you down. People will fall short. People claim they're going to give you a ride, don't show up. People claim they're going to give you a reference, they may not respond. People may claim they're going to loan you some money, they may not do that. That's okay. Get on your hustle. Create your positive mental picture. Protect your mind from negative thoughts. The next C, clear your mind of doubt. Most importantly, self-doubt. Again, our mind is a sponge. If you feed a lot of negative thoughts, you entertain a lot of negative energy, guess what happens to you? You become that negative naysayer. You're already telling yourself, I can't do it. I'm not going to be able to do this. Well, I can't learn all of that information. Man, too many of us have done it before us. They're waiting on us to catch up. Get out of the pity party. Get out of the self-doubt. Everybody's gone through a bad relationship, a bad personal relationship, a bad friendship, a bad work relationship. There is no such thing as most people walking through life squeaky clean. Brush your shoulders off. Get up. Today is a new day. Stop tripping. E, embrace the challenge. These challenges many men, many women have met, and many have succeeded. You are next. Believe it. Take ownership of your destiny. Stop putting your life on pause. Stop waiting to hit the lottery. Stop waiting for somebody to come and save you when you could be the savior yourself by believing in you.
True.
You already got the tools. You just got to put it to work. Now that you done embraced the challenge, we're going to go to the last two S's of success. Stay on track. Create a schedule. By next week, I will have done this. In the following month, I will have completed these tasks. I will have talked to people in that profession. I will have talked with the Department of Occupation and Regulation to understand what it is to become a nurse or what it is to become whatever it is, a licensed beautician or nail technician. All of these things are lucrative, and they are a need for human consumption, human payment, which means you benefit from providing an excellent service. I don't care how many stores or salons or barbershops or businesses already exist. They haven't seen yours yet. Expand your network. Surround your people of like-mindedness. And next thing you know, you showing the world what you can do, which is the final S. Show the world you can do it. They're waiting on you. You'd be surprised the funding opportunities, the resources available to help you start your business, start your career, change your life, become a landowner comfortably. You got more money than you got in a month versus having more days in a month than you got money. Again, that goes back to understanding the economics. Pay yourself first. Save. Invest in your children. Start saving for them. You don't have to eat out every day. You don't always have to have the latest pair of shoes. It's all a gimmick to take your money, to keep you in debt. Success is a choice, but it's a choice that's offered to everybody in this land we live in. But faith without work is foolish. If you're not going to believe in you, why would you expect that bank to give you a loan? Why would you expect an equity investor to invest in your product or your design or your, you know, whatever it is that you can invent? You got to have a strong will to succeed and taking a no is not an option. One door closed, another one opens. Protect your dreams, but carry it out. In this life we have, we don't know when God's going to call our name. Walk in faith, walk in trust, and believe in yourself first. I don't care what you've been through. It's already written in the Word. Whatever happened, is gone. If you pray to the good Lord or whatever your spiritual advisor is, he's already forgiven you for that. Move on. Stop carrying bags. Stop carrying the baggage. Stop wondering what if. Talk about what next. You don't drive looking in the rearview mirror. You glance in the rearview mirror where you don't want to go. You got a big windshield in front of you with all the opportunities in the world.
That's right.
Look ahead. Trust yourself. Follow your instincts. Be bold. You no longer have to live feeling like, I can't, I won't, they won't give me this. They're not going to give you anything. You got to force their hand. Persistence breaks down resistance. If you go at it hard enough, long enough, I guarantee you will be successful. You will seek your goal. I am proof. I chose not to allow people that got in my way to discourage me from my end game. And oh, yeah, there's going to be people around you that you thought was cool. Be careful what you share with them. Your dream ain't for everybody. Oh, they think they better than, they think they bougie because they doing this. Well, you know what? If I want to be bougie, that's my business. I earned it. What is that anyway? Oh, because I'm able to pay for my bills, take care of my kids, live comfortably, come and go as I please. If that's what you want to call it, sign me up. Don't get caught up in the foolishness, the gossip, the ill wills. Trust yourself. Believe in your success because success is yours, but you got to go at it. You got to go at it like your life depended on it. And understand, what drives me may not drive you. What drives you, that's yours. Own it. Own it. Create a legacy. You don't have to always read about other people's legacy. Create your own. Create your own. Give your children something they'll be proud of. Give yourself a pat on the back for getting this far. Because I'm sure if you just reflected on a few things and some people, we done lost a lot of folks here recently, whether through illness, unsuspecting tragedy. So be grateful you got a chance to get this thing right. And there are resources out here to assist you. If you want to start a business, most people don't know the Office of Minority Business Enterprise at the City of Richmond are there to help you establish your business, write a business plan, and put you in line with contracts. No charge. Training is free. You may have to pay like an application fee, like $25 or $50. But the rest of the services to put your business out there and to get you in touch with people that will benefit from your service is free. And people don't make use of it. They will literally market your business to vendors or owners that come to the city looking for contractors or services to help them with their development or whatever it is they're doing, and your name will pop up. Life is too short. Don't miss your opportunities. Read. I've got some books that I had to bring to my side to make sure I make clear a lot of the things that I've learned listening and following with my parents led me to read. And a few of those books, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, by Dennis Kimbrough and Napoleon Hill. And one of the emphatic statements is the worst thing is to want success, and when success presents itself, you're not prepared. Get ready. Get ready for your success. Prepare yourself. Unlimited Power, A Black Choice, Anthony Robbins. All of the things that we need are before us, but we cannot sit back and wait for it to happen because it will walk right on past you. My brother, talk to him.
Yes, sir. Brother. We passed, the cutoff time, but you were rolling so well. I said, you know what? I'm going to sit back and take all of this in. Now, what I want you to do is, right, whatever you do to the listeners, listen to me, right? If you are an African-American, a person of color, share this program with somebody you know, right? The brother laid it all out. He did a wonderful job, right, of sharing his life experiences, but also giving a whole ton of nuggets, right, that we could all use useful tools for success because success is yours. So Slido is in effect. Brothers and sisters, if you don't want to talk directly, it's Slido.com. The number today is 2717088. That's 2717088 on the Slido side. That means if you want to make an anonymous comment, send that in. If you want to contact or talk to the brother or myself or Brother George, 845-277-9250. Brother Spence, thank you very much. You did so much, man. You talked about parents and politics and principles and character, study habits and resilience and priorities and economics, and your life is valuable and the tools for success. It just goes on and on. Let's go to the lines real quick, right? And then we'll talk. Man, brother, thank you though. Right? This is a powerful tool. So let's go on over to 0148, your first online. 0148, welcome to the Empowerment Network. We got a brother Spain here today, an educator, a mentor, engineer, and a great brother. You can hear that for yourself. All right, 0148, are you there?
Peace and blessings, brothers George and Brother Marvin, and peace and blessings to your guest. I could only listen from this point on. He has supplied me, I think, with a whole host of information that I could utilize even myself. I'm at work right now as I'm listening, and it's just giving me energy to push forward. Peace, brother. Thank you so very much for your energies across these airwaves.
God bless you, brother.
Right. Thank you.
Much success to you. Thank you.
Brother Lush. Wow. You see that? It's inspirational. And that's what it is, African-American empowerment. Imagine if we're doing this all day, every day, inspiring and developing and talking to our people and sharing the nuggets, and we're actually taking them and applying them to our lives. That's the work that we have to do. That's the work that we have to do.
Absolutely.
Let's go over to Slido for just a minute. And I got a Slido comment in here.
Can I interject?
Yes, sir.
Marvin, before you
go right ahead.
Yeah, I want to say this to you. you know, while I got a minute to say, I feel privileged that you shared your life's experiences of great challenges that you took on and successfully got past to get to the point where you at in life, and you still ain't finished. And for sharing that, you know, and I was able to hear that with my ears, I really feel privileged, brother, and thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. And like I said, much respect to you and Brother Marvin for inviting me. Again, I've life is about service. You know, the ability to earn a living and, you know, for me, of course, you know, living my dream and working in my profession, it's still about service. I learned that early on through my, you know, involvement with my church. And, you know, it's about helping people that may not see the way. And maybe what I shared today, if it helps one, that's great. If it reaches more, that's even better. But sometimes when we hear it from one another, you know, that can be the catalyst of a life-changing, you know, event. And it worked for me. And that's why I'll never stop sharing my story or sharing my zest for success, because anyone can do it. You just got to commit to it.
Thank you, brother.
I like that. That word, commitment, is so important. Thank you, Brother George. Let's go slide on over to Slido. Here's your first question. How do you suggest we begin to take the steps to recreate our families and communities? How do you suggest we begin to take the steps to recreate our families and communities?
How do you suggest we recreate our families and communities? Number one, they got to start in the household. You know, too often, and I say this with a snapshot of my own household. COVID made my wife and I realize the importance of literally sitting down and having a conversation with our children and our grandchildren versus before COVID, everybody was like passing ships in the night or in the day. You know, when you're not sitting down and having conversations with your children, you miss a lot. So I would say the family bond has to start first. Once you hopefully are able to reestablish that or build on what may already exist, I think then is demonstrating action in the community. You know, if it's working in the local kitchen, going to the local church, you know, whatever, you know, your religious beliefs may be, I think that kind of allows you to enrich the community when you're doing it in conjunction with, you know, a staple of the community, whether it's a church, a community group, organization, what have you. And when your children see you doing that, they understand the importance of it, right? If I can see my mom doing it or my dad doing it, you know, then it brings a little more character to it versus dropping your kid off at the place and you don't know what they're doing in there. You need to be a part of that also. For me, growing up, being a part of the church and getting involved with the youth ministry, the usher board, leading in programs, that gave me the confidence to speak in front of folks and how you conduct yourself when you have the opportunity to speak before folks. And what that really means, that's a service. That's a service. Another young person seeing me do that, that may not have had interest in doing it before, now they may want to try it. So you can bring about change by leading by example. And one of the things, I was raised Catholic, you know, and I used to ask the question, what do you mean, you know, helping the poor? You know, what does that really mean? And you can be poor financially. You could be poor in your cabinets as far as food. You can be poor spiritually. So everyone has some level or opportunity or season where they've gone through something that they lack. And it's not by their own fault. It could be a hardship, loss of a job, loss of a loved one, injury, anything. But by helping someone, you're showing your family how to be more than just within your household. You're helping your community. So those are just a few things that I've experienced for myself that I've tried to share with my children. And I constantly am, you know, in that growth pattern with them. But that would be my suggestion, to start in home first and have that conversation. Ask your kids what they think about community service or going to church and what community service looks like for them. And you may be surprised. And then if they're not able to really articulate that, help them understand what some of those things are. And I think once you do that, you'll be surprised.
I like that. That's important, right? Not only
Absolutely.
Are we talking about getting your kids out there to participate, but our adults, right, have to get out and provide service as well. You're exactly right. Let's go back to the lines, Brother Spain. He's live on the line. Great show today. 845-277-9250 is the number to call. Slowly, 845-277-9250. Got it, Brother Spain in here educating us on African American Empowerment Saturday. All right, let's go over to 3347. 3347, I see you on the line. Are you talking to us today? You have a question, a comment, or a thought? 3347, you're live. All right, let's go on down to 0673. 0673, you're live. Do you have a question, a comment for Brother Spain?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you
Welcome.
Hear me?
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
What I like about the program, I like, because a lot of times we need models, and we look for national heroes and sheroes as models. I'm honored that this brother is from Richmond, where I am. And I also detect by his presentation that his parents were models. I would love to hear more about how they shaped him. He did say a few things, but overall, I was very inspired by the brother's presentation.
Thank you, brother. So my mother and father were very instrumental. As I mentioned, they adopted me at birth. And, you know, watching my dad, he was a man's man. He worked hard. He showed me literally how to fix things around the house. You know, I would have, as much as I honestly will admit, I didn't like that because, you know, at the time kids was playing outside and he's showing, he takes vacation and we paint the house. You know, he was good at wallpapering and painting. So, you know, on weekends, we would be wallpapering someone's apartment or painting, you know, in a room in their home or whatever. And I'm thinking, man, I could be at home playing and I'm out here painting and hanging wallpaper or working on a sink or, you know, changing out electrical outlets, putting up light fixtures. I'm like, man, what is this all about? Well, long and short, as a homeowner, owning rental property and things of that nature, guess what? A repairman couldn't tell me. I already knew what needed to be done. Right? Life lesson. I was walking around, lip poked out and all that, but life lesson. I got to feel it. As for my mom, they were an excellent tandem for me. My mom was very tough. My dad's from Richmond. My mom was born and raised in Brooklyn. So she didn't take excuses. And, you know, as a young kid, you know, I thought I had a mouthpiece, but she didn't have no problem correcting that mouthpiece in various ways. She was quick with the hand. It was one of those things with her and her sisters, say it again and I'm going upside your head. So I kind of learned early what discipline was all about. They were consistent. I was really proud of my mom where she went back to school and got her degree at VCU, and I attended some of those classes. And it really helped me understand then the importance of, you know, just educating yourself. I was a little disappointed when my mom graduated. I can remember the conversation vividly, sitting at the kitchen table, and my mom was saying, now that I'm finished, now you need to go back to school. Because my dad had a scholarship to go play baseball at Virginia State, but, you know, he fell in love, they got married, et cetera. So she was like, okay, I'll carry the load. You go back and get your degree. But my dad was old school. He wasn't having that. So, you know, I got to learn, well, you know, he was a little stubborn with, you know, going back to school. He still, you know, kept his hustle going. right? You know, in addition to working at Allied, which is now Honeywell down in Hopewell, he worked there for 30 years and he retired. He still did his hustle on the side where, you know, painting, carpentry, light fixtures, everybody in the family, you know, knew to call him if they had an issue. And, you know, I learned probably a great deal more than I've ever given credit for from being by his side doing those types of things. And my mom was pretty industrious, too, and she was an outgoing person. We were active in church. She would take me to the museum, like, every Sunday after church. And I'm like, why are we in here all the time? You know, some of these exhibits and things don't change. She was like, well, that way you understand that there's more to just than our culture, but there are other cultures in this world that you need to understand and or recognize. We used to go to Dogwood Dell. If you're from the Richmond area, back in the early 70s, there was a group called AAE, Awareness Art Ensemble. And wherever they played, we would show up. And the dance group, Alegba Folklore Society, I can remember those ladies and watching them dance and learning that that was our culture, that was our roots, and that those dances were ways of communicating when the enemy was around to keep them unaware of what we were planning. You know, our creativity, our ingenuity is innate. It's in us. The problem is it's not taught. And that's what my parents, I think, really did for me is made me aware of our real culture and that you should not be fooled by someone just telling you something because they want you to believe what they're telling you instead of finding it out for yourself. And that stuck with me, you know, because somebody would tell me something, I'd be outside playing or I see something in school or hear something in school. I couldn't wait to get home and be like, hey, is this true? It was like, well, all them encyclopedias, because we didn't have the internet and all of that back then. You go check them encyclopedias. Right. You know what I mean? And, you know, encyclopedias became the thing. And then me and some of my neighbors, friends that I grew up with, we would compare information in the encyclopedia. You know, we just didn't allow ourselves to just be fooled by what was being taught. But more importantly, learning it for yourself. And I'll say this too. A lot of, you know, dialogue here lately has been, you know, it's the teacher's responsibility. I disagree with that. You know, the teachers are only one vessel of providing the information being taught. If a parent doesn't have time to sit down with their loved one, their child, to go over with what they should be doing at home for homework, or the fact that they don't have homework, that they still read up on whatever it is they learned in that day, that's where the teacher's jobs become easier. Because the teacher can only influence a child if they understand the influence is going the direction that benefits them. Where does that lesson come from? The parent. When the parent sits down with that child and explains to them, that teacher has only got 45 minutes to an hour to teach you a lesson on a subject. And they're in school for maybe 6-7 hours, and you go through 6 subjects, that's 45 to 50 minutes. You're not learning a whole lot. You're being referred to information. The job is when you go home to practice what was referred to in the classroom. We miss that when we think the teacher is supposed to complete a subject throughout an entire semester or a school year. They only got a fragment of time to cover 6 or 7 subjects. There is no way, well, let me just say this. There's a small percentage of students that grasp that subject matter in that time frame. I was one of those that did not grasp that subject in that time frame. It was important for me to go home and carve out time to work on what was taught in that day. That's the only way you get better at it. There is no way a teacher
is going to make your child an expert in that time frame.
Yes, sir.
Brother Spain, I got to get one more call in, right? We got short on time.
Okay,
we
go ahead.
4 minutes.
I'm sorry.
So I want to go over to 31, 37. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question or comment?
Hello there. No, I do not have a question or comment. Unfortunately, I just got on. I had a prior engagement, so I missed the majority of the show. But I just want to say thumbs up. I know it's a good show, and keep doing what you guys are doing.
All right. Go back and listen to this one because it's a really great one. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, sister. Yeah,
okay,
thank you, sister.
Man, close to 4 minutes left, right? I want to try to wrap this up with closing comments from you, right? You gave us a wealth of knowledge and information. This is African-American empowerment, right? We got so many subjects.
Yeah.
I want to go one Slido before we go. One Slido. I got another one in. I want to get that one in. We'll wrap it up on this.
Okay.
It says the discuss the importance of parenting, because you really hit on that. The last caller talked about that in terms of what you mentioned in terms of proper guidance and leadership. We're going to hit that one, and then we'll go to final comments. Discuss the importance of parenting in terms of proper guidance and leadership. Take it away, brother.
The best thing I can say is there's no rule book. As a parent, and fortunately being blessed with two loving parents, you have to do what is right. Doing what is right means how you would expect them to conduct themselves the moment they walk out that door, whether it's an apartment, townhome, beautiful home on the hill, everything from an instruction, manners, politeness, those things have to be taught by the parent to the child so that they understand there are rules that must be followed when they walk out that door. And if they're not being followed in the home, you can't expect them to follow them when they walk outside. So you got to start early. You got to be consistent, and you got to give them a good example. I was fortunate. I had a good example. Yes, my parents enjoyed card games, and they drank their adult beverages on the weekends with friends and family, and we had great times. But they understood, or made me understand, that that is an adult responsibility, and a child's place is not in an adult's conversation. So all of that said, good leadership starts with doing the right thing so that you know your child understands right from wrong, and they understand when they step outside that door how they are expected to conduct themselves.
All right. Brother Spain, man, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. We got to have you back. Whenever you're ready,
African-American. Brother. My pleasure.
Thank you, brother. Engineer, brother, mentor, friend, Robert Spain. Y'all give it up for him. Thank you, brother. All right, Brother George. Man, this was powerful. Do you have any final comments for him?
Just thank you for the blessing, brother. Thank you for the blessing. I'm overwhelmed with all that you talked about and how much that can help our people, man. Can't wait to get you in another setting, where you work and help us with, our young people, man, because really, we need it, and you got the, necessary tools to help us. So that's me.
Life is about service, so I'm here to help. And
thank you, Brother George,
for thinking enough of me to invite me. I really appreciate it. I'm honored.
He sure did. Thank you, brother.
And
all right, we got to have you back.
Can you forward a link? Can you forward a link of this program so that I can forward it on to some folks?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Success is yours, Brother Robert Spain, Brother George. Character, principles, parenting, political awareness. There's so much that we can do, right? Study habits. Prepare yourself. Read, right? Be resilient, understand priorities, and there's so many, many more nuggets. Go back and listen to this. Expand your network, and most of all, success is yours, but it's also a choice. Until next week, tell somebody about this one and many, many more. Create your own legacy. We'll see you next week. Success is yours. The pillars of empowerment, working on yourself. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings.
I like it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.